Blog Talk Radio.
Are you due for a relationship makeover? If you had the power to wave a magic wand, would you use it to improve your relationship? Well, there may be some hope. You're about to embark upon a journey that may prove to be vital in improving your relationship, whether it be with your spouse, significant other, children, co-workers, family, friends, or even yourself. A journey that if you simply open your mind to desiring a positive change in your relationship by listening to this show, it just might happen. You're about to take a journey into the Dr. Jesse Walker Show. Warning.
Hello, once again, and welcome to this edition of the Dr. Jesse Walker Show. I'm your host. I'm Dr. Jesse Walker. I'm going to be with you for the next 60 minutes. Thank you so very much for tuning in. It's a pleasure always to have each and every one of you all on the show with us each and every week. I say to my listening audience around the world, I just can't help but thank you all each week for all that you do. It means a lot to me over these. Coming up in May will be 6 years of having been on the air, and it's really been a thrill. I've enjoyed it, and I look forward to doing it for several more years. We hope to eventually get into mainstream radio where we can do some things. But for now, we're going to continue with this format, and we couldn't do it without you. So thank you all so very much for that. We ask that you continue to tell your family and friends about the program. Let them know that we're out here, that we're doing the show. It's coming to us weekly, and we're certainly enjoying it. So please spread the word on social media and any of your other networks. We're going to ask that you do just that as well. Tonight we've got a very good topic for you. We've been coming up with these various topics, and even some of our guests have been sending us messages that they wanted to have a certain topic, and we've certainly been finding ways to accommodate that. So, stay with us, and as we bring you the topics from week to week and all of these exciting things that we're doing. So you're listening live to the Dr. Jesse Walker Show. Of course, if you want to chime in at any point in time, simply press 1 on your dial. If you feel that you want to just listen by way of the internet, just go to drjessewalker.com and you can tune in that way. So, there are multiple ways of tuning in. If you have a show topic out there that you would like us to address, by all means, just go there and send us a topic at online at drjessewalker.com. If you want to purchase any of our products, you can certainly go to the website at drjessewalker.com or drjessewalkerinc.com, and you can certainly purchase a product there. And you'll find that I have my book there, my coaching services are there. There's a number of products and services that we offer online, so take advantage of that. Take clear advantage of that, and I'm sure that you'll find something there that will benefit you. All right, we're going to get right to tonight's show because it's, for some reason, this hour seems to always go real fast. So we're going to do that. We're going to go right to tonight's broadcast. And we're going to be bringing you the story. As you listen to the topic for tonight, if there's any point in time that you want to get caught up into sending a comment, do that early enough so that we can try to get your comments in, and we'll be able to read them over the air. So listen carefully as we go on and try to deal with the comments so that we can get them in there early enough for you. All right. I trust that all of you all are ready for tonight's broadcast, as ready as I am and as ready as I try to stay. But nevertheless, it's always an interesting thing to be on the air. and to have so many listening audience, so many of my listening audience coming with us. We're going to go ahead at this time and bring in my co-host, Ms. Audrey Blake, author Falling in Love with Me, Mutual Enhancement, and give her an opportunity to make her commercial shout out at this time. Ms. Blake, thank you so very much. It's nice to have you on the air this evening.
Hi, Dr. Walker. It's a pleasure to be on the air again this evening. How are you?
Great. I'm doing wonderful. I trust that you are as well.
I am. It's a beautiful day here in Atlanta, and I trust that Florida is experiencing something as well.
Yes, we are. It's quite warm, but then that's Florida for you.
Yeah. Well, I'll just briefly talk about what I do. I am a certified life coach as well as author of a couple of books, the newest release, Falling in Love with Me, the second edition. And right now I'm in the process of getting all my book signing tours scheduled. So that's been keeping me a little busy. I'm also available for speaking engagements, workshops. So the way you find out more about the company services, which the company is called Fostering Leadership in You, you can go to our website at fosteringleaders.org, or you can give us a call at 770-866-2162.
Okay. Ms. Blake, let me ask you while you're on, while you're giving your commercial shout-out, have you ever considered, and I'm going to use a Bible phrase, casting your net on the other side? And by that I mean, like, considering going international, you know, doing some promotion internationally. I mean, it just came to my mind a few minutes ago, and I think that that's a route that I may want to consider taking.
Yes, I actually have. One of the things about Falling in Love with Me, we want to get it translated so that it can be, you know, translated at least into Spanish as a starter so that other people can benefit from, you know, the reading and the message as well.
Okay. All right. Okay. Sounds great. All right. You ready for the show's, the story for this evening?
Yes, I am. I'm looking forward to hearing it.
All right. This is kind of a brief one. The characters are Harry and India. Harry and India. India is like the country. Harry and India, they're both senior citizens now, and they are taking this opportunity to reflect on their marriage of the last 45 years. And they're actually doing this reflection. They're experiencing feelings of regret about how they raised their three adult children, how they raised their children from small, which are now adults. Now, the couple is realizing that they failed to set the right examples in front of them. Now, here are some of the poor examples that they set in front of their children. This is just a few of them. They would often argue in front of the children, which is now problematic for all three of their children and their own marriages. This is now problematic for all three of the children. You know how sometimes you hear where people say, well, it may be a problem for one, but it's a problem for all three because children do live what they learn. Now, number two, they failed to take the children to church weekly on a regular basis. They figured that the children could make their own decisions when they became adults. Now, number three, they actually failed to place higher demands on academic education for the children, which now has affected all three of them because they have difficulty finding and staying on jobs. And part of this is due to the fact that they don't have a foundational education. None of them went to trade school, vocational school, or even college for that matter. All three now have, at least a minimum of two children. And it's from different people. They have two boys and a girl. And the two sons have two babies each from different ladies, and the daughter has two kids from different men. The parents failed to show love in the home, and now each of their children have been married twice, and they've actually got one going on his third marriage. Now, they both have had multiple relationships with other people while married, and the kids were well aware of this. So, you know, you begin to wonder, what's kept this couple together for 45 years? But they have also been separated on a number of occasions, and some of those separations went on for years. Now, this, of course, brings us to our topic for this evening. Do parents always set the right example. Blake, I mean, I can start out by saying, in reference to our first night, that Harry and India clearly did not always, if ever, set the right example. I mean, I guess you could look at them now and say, well, their marriage lasted for 45 years. But, you know, 45 years, with a number of those years being separated, you know, and going back and forth, and they probably just came together in their senior citizen years to, you know, to settle with somebody that they already know, each other. All right. What do you think? Do parents always set the right example, Ms. Blake? What do you think?
Of course not. I mean, we're human, and so parents are human beings. And as long as you're dealing with human beings, you're going to be dealing with errors and mistakes. That's just normal.
Okay. Based on some of these poor examples that were set, I mean, here the kids experience their parents having multiple affairs. How serious, in your opinion, is something like that?
It is serious. You know, I guess I'm the person that tries to be careful about judging. But it is serious because you're supposed to be setting an example, and that does impact, you know, how the children will view relationships in the future. So it is serious.
Okay, all right. Would you say that children really emphatically live what they learn?
In a lot of cases, they do. I wouldn't say in 100% of the cases. But, you know, in a lot of cases, of course, that's their exposure. That's how they see the world. But one of the things that I would tell this couple, if they were talking to me as a life coach, you know, I always tell people to not live with regrets. And people may disagree with me, but the minute I hear about somebody sitting and saying, I regret, you know, that's something I personally try not to do, because you can't undo the past. So sitting around regretting it is of no significance, in my opinion. But what you can do is work on the present and the future, you know, and so they can talk to their children.
Okay. I mean, and that's so important. That is so important. And, you know, I tend to think also that children live what they learn. And I'm with you. Don't beat yourself up too bad when you've made these mistakes. But I think that the parents have got to, and this is what India and Harry have reached at the point where they are. They're realizing that, you know what, we didn't do such a good job. You know, we did a poor job, as a matter of fact, because, you know, look how the kids have turned out. You know, we wanted them to figure it out for themselves, which, in fact, now it's like it's coming back to haunt us. Ms. Blake, we're going to ask you to hold the line a second. We're going to go to the phone lines early tonight. We're going to go to 786-624. You're live on the Dr. Jesse Walker Show. Who do we have on the air with us?
Sharon Brown.
Okay,
hello?
Ms. Sharon. Thank
you.
Yes, we can hear you very loud and clear. Thank you. Ms. Sharon, let me ask you, do you think that parents always set the right example? And if so, why? Or if not, why not?
No, I don't feel that parents always set the right example. A lot of parents have been exposed, maybe themselves, to parents who raised them a certain way. So we react on what we know and also what we learn. We're always learning. So when parents make certain decisions and they know that it wasn't the right one, I think that can be used as a stepping stone to even help our children to see, well, this is one way we did it, but there are other ways that you could be able to make better decisions. And if we use these examples to help our children, they will learn to trust more. They'll be able to trust their parents more and to see, well, mom showed me this, she did it this way, but then I have the choice to do it this way. And if you're open and honest with your children, then they will be able to respect you and also to love you, because they'll see that what mom and dad, they really do understand, and if I can make this choice and I can make better decisions, that will have better outcomes.
All right, but let me ask you, are there any guarantees? Are there any guarantees in life?
Okay, are there guarantees that
and are there any guarantees
make better
that
decisions?
If you do all the right things, you know, teaching your kids, you're setting the right examples. Are there any guarantees that those kids are going to fall in line with those with the things that you've taught them, your training?
Not necessarily, because we're being influenced every day by the encounters that we have, friends that children may, you know, that they may meet, or acquaintances. They're being influenced all the time. So even though you're studying one premise, sometimes, you know, children will make other decisions.
All right. Sharon, we're going to ask you to stand by. Miss Blake, let me just ask you. I mean, here's the case where Harry and India here, I mean, been married for 45 years, but they've been separated for so many years, back and forth, going back and forth. That in itself sets a bad example for kids to even look at. So there's doesn't seem like there's any real foundation. They've obviously gotten back together in their later years, because they're now senior citizens. And they probably figured, you know what, I'm getting older, there's no future with, you know, with some of these people that I've had affairs with. So let me just stay with my wife since I'm already married to her. Let me stay with my husband since I'm already married to him. So they got back together. But now they are reflecting. And they're looking at the poor job that they did raising their children. So, Ms. Blake, my question is, I mean, 45 years later, I mean, and I know you say don't beat up on yourself too hard, but, I mean, the parents seem like they were the children. I mean,
and they might have been. You know, they might have been. Okay. They might have gotten married too young. They weren't ready. I love what our caller just said, though. I think it was absolutely wonderful, everything that she said, because you do use those as learning opportunities, and people appreciate being real. So when you're able to sit down with your children or grandchildren and say, hey, you know, I didn't always get it right, and admit that, and admit your humanity, because a lot of times I think people forget we are human. I'm not using it as an excuse, but a lot of times folks are so hard on other people for their mistakes, and people are hard on themselves. So they can use this as opportunities of what to do better in the future and help future generations.
All right, so Ms. Blake, what if I present that to Sharon as well? I present this out here that the young lady, she gets pregnant at 17, and her mother and grandmother have been trying to tell her, keep her on course, because the mother got pregnant at 18. And now she's been trying to instill it into her, and she gets pregnant at 17. Why didn't the girl listen?
Who do you want to go first? Okay.
You.
I have strong opinions about that. Well, I've just learned that there's a whole lot that is genetic. And I can truly say that. I know this without a doubt. Because I've just been blessed to have certain experiences that really show me firsthand. The other thing is, you know, people have to learn. Sometimes people learn the hard way. Unfortunately, you don't want your kids to learn the hard way, but sometimes that's the way God allows it to take place.
All right. Sharon, let me ask you that same question along the same line. Why didn't the young lady listen? I mean, here it is that I'm sure the mother was there. She was telling the young lady, you know, these are the pitfalls that I want you to avoid, because this is what happened to me. So I'm giving you instructions so that you can make a difference in your life. You know, you don't have to be bogged down with a kid at such a young age. You can go on and have some fulfillment in your life. So Sharon, I ask you the question, why didn't the young lady listen?
Well, first of all, we don't know if she wasn't listening. She probably was. But then you have to look at the different factors involved, with precautions made so that she would not be around that certain guy certain hours, or what steps were taken so that she didn't go down that path. Sometimes, if a parent has done certain things, many times the atmosphere fosters those poor decisions. For instance, she may be dating for long periods of time by herself with this guy. She's left alone, and the temptation, sometimes different generations, they pass down different attitudes or behaviors or patterns of lifestyle. And if those are not curbed, then we tend to see that over generations you have certain behavior patterns that come down through the family. And sometimes you might need a therapist, you might need somebody on the outside to help you to set goals so that those patterns are not continued. And sometimes we just need help to do those things. Maybe a family doesn't see the patterns. And by going to a therapist or going to a counselor, the counselor can be able to show them and they set goals so that they can break those patterns.
All right. All right. Stand by with that.
Dr. Walker.
Yes.
I do want to add to that, if I may. That's excellent. Mm-hmm. You know, I used to run teen pregnancy prevention programs in South Carolina that are actually still going on called Teen Talk. And one of the things that we learned from the children and from our focus groups is that adults are always trying to tell kids, say no, abstain. And I agree, abstinence is definitely best. But here's the problem. They're not given the tools of how to do that. Because I tell people when I speak from churches to community, just saying no is not enough. And because if it was, you wouldn't have so many teens that are pregnant. And so giving them the tools and teaching them how to, like the caller said, avoid those situations and what to do if you find yourself in the situation, how to get out of it. And that's what's lacking, is teaching those skill sets.
I think that is so important. You're listening live to Dr. Jess Walker. We're going to take another caller, we're going to take this other caller momentarily. Just before we do, I'm going to put a question out there, and I will probably come back to both of you all. And that question is, Ms. Blake, I heard you say earlier that some things are genetic. And if that's the case, then it's inevitable. It's going to happen. So then because maybe a young man's father was a womanizer, is there a likelihood that he, too, will be a womanizer? Hold those thoughts. We're going to come back to you all. Let's go to the phone lines again for now. We're going to go to 954, looks like 226.
Hi, Dr. Walker. This is Rose.
Rose, thank you for joining us. Rose, what do you say? I mean, do parents always set the right example? You know, do they?
I would agree with everyone else and say no to that. I don't think parents always set the right example, but at times maybe they think for the knowledge that they have or what they have gained or learned from their parents, they might think they're doing the right thing at times when they're actually not. But also, they're humans too, you know? And parents, they don't always get it right. But what I wanted to speak to was that when you ask, you know, when the parents or the mom who got pregnant young and try to talk to her daughter and tell her not to go in, you know, follow the same path that she did, and the daughter still ends up getting pregnant. I agree with what everyone has said, but I also think, poor decision making is a factor there. And sometimes teenagers just don't know how to make the right decisions. But I also believe that sometimes teenagers just think they know everything, you know, and they just don't listen to the parents and. Sometimes it's rebellion because they think, well, you did it, why can't I? You know, they'll throw that back to their mom. Well, you did it, so who are you to tell me that I can't? And sometimes teenagers, you know, we were there once, and we think that we just know everything, you know. And so we want to go out and we want to do what we want to do, regardless of what our parents try to tell us or try to. And so we want to experience for ourselves at that age sometimes. So sometimes, in addition to everything else, I think sometimes teenagers just fail to listen and they want to do their own thing.
All right. Rose, we're going to ask you to stand by with that. We're going to go to that other question in a moment. But, Rose, just before I do, I want to ask you, with our characters in tonight's story, Harry and India, do you think that they set poor examples? I mean, they themselves now, after 45 years, they're reflecting. And they realized that they did a poor, probably a horrible job in raising their children. And one of the areas that they failed in was taking their children to church on a regular basis. Why is that so important that they're coming to the point of concluding that right now? Instead, they were saying, hey, let the children figure it out when they become adults.
I do believe that they did a poor job in many instances. I mean, not taking the kids to church, not encouraging them when it comes to education, you know, allowing them to do whatever. I believe those were all poor decisions. Maybe they were very young, And maybe they were just the party type and didn't really care much or think much about the future. And, you know, they just have the kids and they were just parents or mothers and fathers, but not really parenting the kids as they should. They didn't realize the outcome, what the outcome would be, apparently. So, yes, I think they did a poor job, but they also did a poor job in their marriage. Apparently, they didn't really know how to be married because you said that they broke up several times, separated, getting back together, back and forth. That in itself is a bad example for the kids because right there it's teaching the kids that, you know, the foundation is just not right. And, you know, when you grow up, you don't have to commit to your spouse. You don't have to always stay with them. You can go ahead and have affairs because that's what we're doing. So that's really poor parenting, in my opinion. Why did they do that? You know, I really don't know. Maybe they just didn't know any better, or I think they just didn't think ahead. They didn't think about the future, the effect it's going to have on their children. So now they're reflecting. Now they are, you know, being sorry for the way that they raise the kids, because now they're so much more mature and they realize their mistakes. But I mean, it's a little bit too late, you know. I don't know how they're going to correct that. They, you know, it's really too late.
That's an interesting point. Let's go back now, Sharon. We're going to go to you first, and we're going to ask that question. Ms. Blake spoke to the issue of genetics, and if the father was a womanizer, is there a likelihood, based on what's been presented to you, is there a likelihood that the son might be a womanizer?
Yes, I think so.
Okay, you think so, and why is that? Why is that? So it's not the son. Why is that? And then maybe it's not the son's fault then.
Well, I don't know if we would say if it's really anybody's fault. I mean, if parents make certain decisions, and children are at the age where they're making a decision to commit to someone, first of all, they should get premarital counseling, right? Before, or when you're in relationships and you come to the age of decision, you want to commit, there's certain values. I think it all depends on your values. If you want to build something, you have to have the proper foundation, as we heard before. So you want to put those building blocks that are going to give you that foundation for what you're trying to build. Right,
okay.
But if you're not putting the proper foundation, then you're going to get exactly what you put into it.
Okay.
So I think that's really important. That even though a lot of parents, I mean, even my parents, they did certain things a certain way, but that was all the knowledge they had back then. But now, as I've studied and I am more exposed to different ways of doing things, I will make that choice to have a proper foundation so that my relationship with the foundation I'm building will stand. You know,
Go ahead.
As a mental health therapist, many times when I have a family in front of me, I don't want to judge the family. There's so many different factors and experiences that people have gone through that we could easily say, oh, they made a bad decision, this couple, they set a bad example, but then we don't know exactly what caused them to do what they did or how they did not have the coping mechanisms to deal with the situations they were going through. And like I said before, they could be used as stepping stones to teach the children. We did this, and this was the outcome. Now, is that what you want, or do you want something different? What steps are you going to take so that you have a different outcome? In the end, we've got so many sexual transmitted diseases. Do you want to continue with different partners, or would you like to build a happy family so that 45 years from now you can see that you have built the foundation you wanted, and you can also pass on these skills to your children? So it's all how you see it.
Okay.
And
all
I'll give an example later of what I'm talking about.
Okay, certainly. All right, Ms. Blake, let's go over to you. You talked about genetics. I mean, could it be that, hey, if my father was a womanizer, there is a likelihood that I'm going to be a womanizer? Or if the woman, her parents were out there, there's a likelihood that she's going to be out there. Is there any validity to that? Ms. Blake?
I'm sorry, I was talking and didn't realize I didn't take mute off. There is some validity to it, but again, it's about teaching and training your children, being open with them, and letting them know, you know, these were, you know, things that happened to me and the consequences of those things, and I don't want to see that for you. And really giving them the skill sets to make healthy decisions, lots of prayer, lots and lots of prayer. And I have personally seen the difference that that makes, that the patterns are not being repeated because you make them aware of those patterns. And not just make them aware, but you give them, you teach them skill sets. So, you know, like with my own children, I'm very, very open with them and always have been. And I see the results of that in a positive way.
You know, and I want to present something here, and I'm not presenting this just to sound like devil's advocate, but I'm going to present something that, based on experiences that I've encountered, you know, doing, being out here doing areas of psychology and even during my internship for 3 years, I mean, just meeting with different families and studying the culture and history of families, and I mean, really getting involved with family dynamics. And let me tell you, I want to respond to the question that I asked based on genetics. If the father was a womanizer, is there a good likelihood that the son could be? Parents were out there. Is there a good likelihood that the woman's going to be out there? And I say there is always that. There's always that likelihood. But it's very strong, very strong. And like Sharon said earlier, you know, as a mental health therapist, there is, you know, she doesn't know if it's anybody's fault. But it's almost, but I asked the question, it started somewhere. It had to have started somewhere. And until we break it off somewhere, perhaps it could continue. Rose, let's go to you just for a second. Give me your thought.
And I'm going to say it's a possibility. It could be genetics. But also, couldn't it also be just a learned behavior? Now, this boy grew up seeing his father cheating with several women. Could it be that he learned it from his father and not necessarily genetics?
I mean, that's always a, that's always a possibility also. But what about if he didn't grow up with his father and he still turned out to be this way? And then the mother says to him, and he's never even had any real communications with his father. She says, this boy, now he's 27. And that mother says, this boy has the same tendencies. That's why I divorced his father. He's got the same tendencies. Now he's going through his second wife. He can't keep a girlfriend because he just can't keep his pants up. And that's what she's saying. Rose, give me that thought.
Well, in that case, I would have to say it's genetic.
Ms. Blake, you wanted to chime in there. Go ahead, Ms. Blake.
Well,
you
know, I was going to say that. I know of adoptees who didn't meet their biological families until they were grown, and they act just alike. I mean, and so I'm convinced that when God created our DNA, there's a lot in our DNA, a lot more. It's not just facial features and physical features that are inherited. But still, that doesn't mean it has to continue. I mean, you may be aware of it. It's like someone prone to alcoholism. You probably don't want to drink, you know, so you look at those things that are, for lack of a better word, weaknesses in your family, and you work a little harder to make sure that those things don't capture you, you know. And then you have people who have had families that have gotten divorced a lot, and those individuals have great marriages because they determine that they want that family structure. So it is possible to overcome what we sometimes term as generational curses.
Okay, I think that that's an interesting point. It's a very interesting point. And, you know, a lot of my research is extensive, just as I'm sure that all of my callers here on this phone have extensive research background. And, you know, I go back even biblically, and I'm looking at, you know, for those that subscribe to creation, which I do, I look at even Noah, you know, the story about Noah and the ark. Only 8 people being saved. And I'm saying, why? You know, I've asked the question for years, and it took me back to some biblical research. Why would God destroy babies in the flood, innocent little babies? And the only thing, I mean, my research has taken me extensively, and I come to the conclusion that, you know what, chances are they were going to grow up and be just like their parents. So that's that DNA. You know, if they don't have any training, they're going to be off the chain just like their parents, and God wasn't having it. Sharon, let's go to you. What, do you think that there's any validity in that? I mean, here's Harry in India, or Noah with the ark. I mean, God destroying babies in the flood. I mean, can you make any sense of any of that?
Well, I know that once a child decides that, well, knows right from wrong, then they're held accountable. They need to make their own decisions. But once they're, let's say, a baby or 1 year old, it depends on the parents and their lifestyle what would happen to the children. For instance, what we know also, another biblical example would be when they tried to blame Daniel in the lion's den. Remember what happened when he was found that he wasn't guilty? What happened to the men that tried to set him up? Not only were those men put into the lion's den, but their wives and their children. So it runs through the veins. And I think one of the main factors that can help to turn young people around from continuing this generational curse is the Lord and the Holy Spirit. Once the Lord touches you and changes and transforms you, and you make that decision that I am going to break it, we of ourselves cannot. But we know with a power that's greater than us, the Holy Spirit, we can do all things. So that's really the main force that will break these generational curses. And there's hope. I think there's hope. You don't have to feel as though you're going to do the same thing your parents did. You know, once you have a plan and you have steps and you have goals and you have the help to make better decisions can be made.
Right.
Okay. All right. Okay. On that note, we're going to take some of the comments that have come into the studio about tonight's topic. Do parents always set the right examples? All right, let's take a look at this comment. Ms. Blake, we're going to give you the first one. This young man sends in his comment. He says, after having my own children who are now teenagers, I can say that my parents did not always set the right example. I saw my parents often argue in front of my sister and I, and it has a negative effect on both of our marriages to this day. Their arguments at the time proved to be harmful to us because it has obviously carried over into our marriages. Ms. Blake, I mean, here's a young man, he's saying that, you know what, it affected him and his sister. And now they obviously are arguing in front of their children. So, I mean, what message could you possibly, but now he's seen that, where the origin of it. It came from watching his parents. So why is it then, Ms. Blake, is it so important that parents do not argue in front of their children? And then there's a two-part question to this. Then if you don't have some argument in front of them, would children view that as reality or fantasy?
I was just going there. We were on the same path with that. You know, because I was just going to say either one is bad. And I don't like the word bad, but, you know, not as good. And meaning that if they're arguing in front of the children all the time, that's not great. But if they never argue and it's always seem like they're in heavenly bliss, then the kids are not learning how to handle conflict. So they need to learn how to handle conflict and see adults model. Yes, you know, your dad and I was a little upset with each other, but you know, we were able to work that out, and adults and people will have differences at times. So I think it's just a matter of them not really seeing the conflict resolution that was probably the more problematic thing.
Yeah. Okay, all right. You know, Sharon, we're going to go to you in a moment, but let's take this other call. We're going to go to 917, looks like 399. Welcome to the Dr. Jesse Walker Show. Who do we have on the air with us?
Hi, Dr. Walker. This is Angela.
Angela, thank you for joining us. Angela, can you help us make some sense out of this? Do parents always set the right example? And if so, why or why not?
I actually was going to agree with the last person. arguing isn't. I argue in front of my kids every once in a while. They need to know that we can argue, but yet it doesn't affect our relationship. And normally, I'll let them argue things out to try to work things out. But if I see that it's getting a little out of hand, then I'll intervene.
Okay. Well, let me ask you this. Assuming that you're married, let's say you and your husband's argument in front of the kid, did you ever, in the course of your argument, do any name calling or get physical in front of the children?
Never physical, but yes, maybe yelling and screaming. And I do remember one particular time, or maybe several times, we resorted to calling each other names, but then we stopped ourselves and realized that we were doing it in front of the kids, and we'll either send them out the room or we'll excuse ourselves and take it in the room, or we'll say, you know what, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to call you by your name. I was a little upset. We'll apologize to each other because we don't want that to happen with our kids.
Are you apologizing
in front
of the kids?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Okay. All right. But when you take it to the room, or you ask the kids, I mean, come on, kids are not dumb. When you take it to the room, you say, let's continue this argument inside the room. Now, don't you think the kids, if they're not going by the door, the argument is probably so intense that they hear it outside the door. So, Angela, I got to ask you, what's the difference?
Well, the difference is that we're still together, and they know that,
okay.
You know, at the time, things get really heated because how can I explain it? I'm a little rough around the edges when it comes to my kids. Like, I give it to them raw. In other words, everything that comes out of my mouth, it's sort of like, I can't even remember. I use a little vulgar language, so they know how I am. Like, I could be a street person, and so I keep it like that when I'm explaining certain situations or when they get into trouble, I just keep it 100 with them. And when I get upset, I tend to go a little overboard. I may curse a little bit, and sometimes I may say some things that I shouldn't say. But then they'll say, well, Mommy, why you had to say it like that? Or, Mommy, why'd you call me this? And I'll say, well, when I'm nice to you, you don't listen to me. So I feel as though I have to resort to this. And it gets a reaction from them to communicate back with me. And then I'll tell them, I don't really mean to say this, even though I said it. But at the same token, kids today, I kind of look at them as backwards. Because you can be the nicest person in the world, say sweet things to them, and it goes to one ear and out the other. They're not paying attention to you. They're not listening. But then the minute you curse at them or call them out their name, you have a reaction. Now they're confrontation with you. Now they're, oh, you didn't have to say that. Oh, you didn't have to call me that. So.
Okay. Angela, I want to ask you this question, and we're going to move on here. I got to ask this question. So, you know, there's an old saying that there's something that you can't retrieve. You know, there are three things that you can't retrieve: the spot arrow, the lost opportunity, and the spoken word. So now that you've spoken these words to those kids and you've resorted to having to go in a different direction than you intended to do so, would you want your children saying the same thing to their grandchildren that you said to your own children? Would you want them to raise them that way?
Yes and no. Because either way, they're gonna hear it from me because I'm that type of grandmother where they'll just about hear anything come out of my mouth. And I'm just being honest with you. I have these conversations with my kids, and they always say they're not gonna have no kids. And then I discuss if they ever have any kids, I'm not gonna sugarcoat anything. And the same way I'm with you is the same way I'm gonna be with them. And if you don't want me to discipline them and keep it 100 with them, don't send them over. Because you already know you're going to have to debunk them when they get home.
Okay. All right. Angela, you know what I love about you being calling these shows? You do keep it real, and that's what this show is all about.
I love
it. You listen live.
I try to. They actually laugh about some of the things. Like when their friends are here, it's like their friends enjoy being around me because – Their parents aren't like that. We talk about everything that's under the sun, and we discuss things that most kids don't discuss with their parents. And they, and my kids will come home and say, hey, Mom, guess what happened today? I was talking to my friend, and they're all talking about how you make them laugh and you're funny and how you just you break it down in a way. It's just street talk. It's on their level. And I'm saying that's how I try to be all the time.
All right.
I really admire that. I just want to say that, too. That's very admirable. Cause there are a lot of people out there being fake and phony and politically correct, and kids know when you're not real.
Exactly.
So let me just ask you, Rose, let me go to you and switch gears just for a second, and Sharon, we're going to come back to you as well. Rose, let's say you've got kids, right, and now they're teenagers, and now let's say in high school, and all of a sudden you're getting a call from the school that says, because you use profanity to your kids, and now the teacher's saying, hey, your child, every other word is a profane language. Now we're going to have to suspend this kid.
Well, I guess if I'm using it to them at home, I should expect them to use it at school because they are going to, it's the norm for them. So therefore, if the teacher were to call me and tell me that, I would probably apologize to the teacher, and I will probably get at my child for saying, listen, you can't do that in school. But I can't get too mad at him or her because they're getting it from me, and I'm using that language to them. So I really don't think it's fair to the child for me to get so upset with him or her because this is the language they're accustomed to, okay? Now I'm sitting here, and I'm saying maybe something's wrong with me because I guess it's going to sound kind of weird. Because I have never once heard my parents argue, not once.
Mm-hmm.
And I have never argued in front of my kids with their father, not once. So I don't know. Maybe I am unusual. I don't know.
All right. Well, Rose, let me ask you, do you have perfect kids?
Of course not. I don't have perfect kids. I don't expect to. But I suppose because when I was growing up, maybe because I didn't hear my parents arguing, I thought that I should not argue in front of my kids. So if we have a disagreement, we don't discuss it in front of the kids. We discuss it, you know, later on or some other time, but we do not discuss it or argue in front of the kids. I'm sure they know that we must argue because we're not perfect, but I just never did.
Just a quick question, Rose. If any of your kids are married, do they have you ever heard maybe one of your kids call and say that they had an argument, and if so, did they argue in front of their kids?
No, actually, no. They have never told me that they do. And maybe because they're not accustomed to seeing that, maybe they don't. It doesn't mean that they don't have disagreement with their husband, but I think they just don't do it in front of their children. I'm going to have to ask them about that.
Okay, that's a good point. Sharon, we want you to come on in. Sharon, what do you think here with this comment? We've got to move on quickly, you all, so give your comments real quick. Sharon, what do you think?
Well, I'm also one of those children that never saw my parents arguing in front of me. However, I saw my mother crying a lot. She cried a lot. And that bothered me, just seeing her so emotional, because my dad, when he said something, that was law. It didn't matter what you thought. His word was always law. So in my marriage, we would have disagreements, and they get really heated, and sometimes it was in front of the kids, but my husband would always pull me aside and say, this should not be in front of the kids. And he would, you know, encourage me that we calm down and we take it into the room and close the door. So he'd pull me in or he'd hold me and take me into the room and we'd close the door. So he was always, you know, helping me with that. I think it's really important. We got some counseling for that, as a matter of fact. And I learned the importance of even your emotions around the children. They pick up on that. You don't have to even start arguing. Just the way you carry yourself. It all affects them. It affects them, nonverbal communication. So that's why, thank God, you know, by the grace of God, I always try to be happy around them and keep a different, no matter what I'm going through, to try to keep the atmosphere happy so that still explain to them how I feel. That's important, too, I think, even though you may not be so happy with situations, but you see it in such a way so that it's a learning experience for them and not something that's going to hurt them in the long run.
All right, well, let me ask you this, Sharon. Could your taking your position of defense when it came to your relationship or arguments with your husband, because you, and let's go back to your early childhood, when you saw the fact that you didn't see your parents argue, but you saw your mother cry a lot, do you think through your teenage years and adolescence and then adult life, do you think it's possible that you perceive your mother as weak because she cried and you internalized this to a point, and you know, we're talking about psychology, the psychology of life here, that you internalize it to the point where you say, I'm not going to let no man do to me what my father did to my mother, in spite of the fact, despite the fact that you didn't see them argue, but the fact that his word was law and it must have offended your mother, this was your defense with your husband. Is that possible, likely?
Well, not really, because my husband is the totally opposite of my dad. He's not that way. He doesn't come across as an authoritarian. I was brought up in an authoritarian home. My husband's very different. He's very laid back. He's very open. He's open to what you think. And the problem was with me that I wouldn't open up and tell him how I felt. And that bothered him because I would internalize and I'd keep it all inside. And I guess that's how I was affected. I couldn't communicate my feelings properly. So that's how I was affected by that upbringing. But no, I didn't see my mother at all as someone weak. I just saw her very humble. She was very, very humble. Whatever he said, do, she would just do it without asking any questions. But even though she was hurting inside, she would cry, but she wouldn't say a word. She would just do whatever she was told to do. That's it.
All right, well, you're saying that you internalized it, but you know, you didn't know how to express your feelings in terms of your argument to your husband.
Exactly.
But could you have seen that you adapted to the DNA of your mother to some degree? Then when you did explode, your husband felt, let's take this in the room.
Because it really came out.
Okay.
Yeah, I really exploded. So then he's like, "Uh-oh, we got to take this somewhere else. Let's go."
I can see that, and we all know how that works. Ms. Blake, if you want to come in, let's take another comment, and we got to move real fast.
Okay. I didn't know you had another comment. Did we have another comment coming in?
Yes, we have several more, and we're going to try to go through these fast. Rose, let me give you this comment, and we'll just take it down the list like this here. Dr. Walker, in reference to tonight's program, do parents always set the right example? And this male writes in, and he says, no, I don't really think that parents set the right examples all the time because they, too, are only human, as you all have said throughout tonight's program. I think some of them do the best they can, and that's about it, based on the information that they had while they were raising you. Rose, I mean, we've covered some of that, but, I mean, it almost makes it sound like, okay, you know, what worked way back then is not working today. I mean, we understand the technology wasn't as pronounced as it is today, but there has to be some foundational stuff that worked back then that still works today.
Mm-hmm.
You know, maybe the kids need to be getting spanked or something today. Maybe things would be different.
I agree with him that parents don't always get it right, as we all said earlier. And I agree with you. You know, maybe some things that work back there with the spanking needs to be reintroduced today. But, no, parents don't always get it right. And I believe that in the past, a lot of times they did the best they could with the knowledge that they had, you know. And now, but is it better or worse right now? You know, in some ways it's better, and in some day, you know, because parents are more read now, and they kind of have a better understanding of parenting in certain areas, you know. But of course, they're failing in other areas where they're not disciplining the kids the way they should. Whereas back then they used to. You know, but now parents, sometimes they take parenting classes and other things where they will know how to train the kids when it comes to focusing on their education and things like that, whereas parents way back when just didn't care much about education because it wasn't something that they were introduced to, you know. So it's like half and half.
Well, you know, Ms. Blake, just quickly here, we got about 3 minutes, and I want to take at least three more comments that have come in. I mean, you breastfed 30, 40, 50 years ago. I mean, is breastfeeding out the picture now? When science has shown over the years that if you breastfeed your child, if you nurse, if we want to use that term, you know, the more modern term, if we want to nurse our kids, there's a good likelihood they're going to turn out to be smarter. I mean, 40, 50 years ago, I mean, so we got to change this now, and we go to the women getting the pump and adding some formula to it. Ms. Blake, help me out here.
Well, I mean, there's variation. You know, you're talking to a public health person. So, you know, from a public health standpoint, yeah, breastfeeding is great, but you never want to make somebody feel guilty for not doing it. So, you know, that's where I come from. But, yeah, obviously it was good. It's the way God made us. God knew what he was doing. But don't make anybody feel like if they're not doing it, they're failing.
Okay. And see, now, as the modern-day mental health therapist, the public health people, like you yourself, Ms. Blake, you know, all of a sudden now we go through these extensive training programs where, oh, we don't do it like this anymore. Instead, we take a time out. Okay. Try taking time out in certain places. Try taking time out in certain places. And you tell those kids, you're going to go into timeout. And the kids. But that's all.
That's what I have to say. Yeah, that's another story because I can tell y'all on another show about that, how I changed from timeout to a good old beating.
Okay. All right, let's take a couple of comments. Sharon, we're going to give you this comment, then we're going to go to Angela. We're going to give Sharon this comment. We're going to ask you all to be brief. Give us about 20 seconds, please. I apologize for that. This female says, do parents set the right example? I think part of setting the right example is that parents should take more stock in ensuring their children make better grades and decisions in school. I think today's youth are getting completely out of control because the parents don't seem to buckle down as much as parents of old times. So she's right on. Sharon, we're going to ask you to go to that, speak to that issue. She's saying parents are not like they were before.
I think parents today, they would like to be more involved. I mean, from my experience, even at the school I go to, I try to be very involved, talking to principal, the teacher, whomever, to find out what my child needs to do. I get involved in the school. I'm there. I think as parents get more involved, the children will do better. And that's what the children want to see. Does my parent really care? It works every time. When parents get really involved, children step up to the plate. And that's just my view on it, education.
Okay, all right. Mm-hmm. All right, Angela, we're going to give you this next comment, and we're going to ask you all of you all to be brief. This male, he writes in, he says, do parents always set the right example? I can't speak for all parents, he says, in the home. But I can say growing up under a single mom, my mom got it right. I don't recall seeing anything that my mother did that caused me to have a negative impact on my life today. As a matter of fact, I think the difference she made was making sure she raised us on the Word of God and introducing us to the practical facets of life as well. Angela, this young man, he says, hey, his mother got it right. She raised him on the Word of God plus the practical things of life. Why is that so important, Angela?
Well, all I can say is based on my lifestyle, I make plenty of mistakes. And my kids question it, and what I would do is sit them down and talk to them and tell them that I'm not perfect and I'm going to make mistakes. And if you point it out to me, I would try my best to correct it and acknowledge it. But at some point, kids have to learn that they can make mistakes and it's okay to make mistakes if you're correcting them. So I don't feel a
Go ahead. We missed the last part. You don't feel what?
I don't think there's a problem with making mistakes. That's the only way that kids are going to learn that making mistakes is okay.
Okay, so that's why they have erasers with pencils on them. But what about the lead pencils? I guess they make those. Okay. All right. And
well, I'm going to tell you like my husband told me. Oh, go ahead, Dr. Moore.
No, go ahead. Angela, what did he tell you?
Oh, what I was going to say is because My husband told me one day that I talk too much and I need to pull the belt out. And I do. I like to talk through everything with my kids. But at some point, they push those buttons. And with my 8-year-old, I have to take the belt out sometimes. This morning, I had to threaten her. If she get in trouble, I'm off today. I'm coming to the school. I'm not asking any questions. I'm bringing the belt. What she do, she get in trouble. But I gave her a chance to fix it, and she fixed it. By the time she got home, it was fixed.
All right, then. So some of that old-fashioned ways can work. Ms. Blake, we're going to give you the last comment. Let's go to it now, this last comment that we have time for, and then we're out of time. This female, she says, do parents always set the right example? Well, at the time when my parents were trying to tell me how life was when I was a teenager, unfortunately, I did not listen. And now that I have my own children, I can clearly see what they were trying to tell me. Even though parents may not always set the right example, I think they are trying to help us avoid the mistakes they made that they may have had may have made at our ages. In this case, I think it helps to set the right example. What do you think, Ms. Blake?
It does help, and I'm going to end with a saying that I heard one time. It says, "Be kind, be understanding, because be forgiving." Because most people are doing the best they can.
All right. I like that saying. All right. On that note, we are clearly out of time. I want to thank all of my callers. Ms. Blake, we thank you for always being with us live every week. Those of you all that we weren't able to get to tonight, we do apologize for that. And those of you all whose comments we weren't able to get to, we do apologize for that as well. Continue putting us out there on your e-blast and your social media and all of the social stuff that you have going on. Let your friends know we're here every Tuesday night. Join us this Friday for your half-hour inspirational program. Of course, if you choose to bypass this Friday, join us here again live next Tuesday for the Dr. Jesse Walker Show. Either until this Friday or next Tuesday, I say to my listening audience around the world, good night, God bless, and thank you, God.